down. But in any event, so I may actually have to be leaving a little early. I have a client who had to fly in for depositions tomorrow. So I'm going to leave the two of you to square off. But what's the first thing you want to talk about sports-wise?
Actually, today, you know, many of our listeners, I think, enjoy the fact that what we do for a living is interesting some of the time, and they like having lawyers on the show because they get a lot of free legal advice from us. Today, perhaps not quite. Because today, I actually want to talk about the law of unintended consequences. Now, we know what that means. Let's give a little bit of a background explanation to our audience and then explain how this applies to sports. The law of unintended consequences is actually a defense in many ways because, for example, I throw a rock and it lands somewhere. And speaking of a rock landing somewhere, who has just walked in and graced our presence? None other than the venerable Bill, call me a Flyers fan, Wolfson.
Well, it's a shame that we don't have much hockey to watch. It's a shame we don't have much
hockey
to watch.
But a lot of other people again. We'll get to that. Bill, your entrance, as always, is timely. Your timing is correct.
Well,
I was
actually,
just explaining, Pat asked me what I wanted to talk about, and I said I want to lead with the law of unintended consequences and explain how this applies to sports and your baseball team.
Well, and of course, Bill, I said, just before you two start, I said that you were going to walk in and have a heart attack because John actually got here before you did.
Well, fortunately, no. My heart is fine.
You're
it's all the working
alive
out.
Alive and well, Bill. You look great.
Alive and well, feeling good. I've just had a great weekend off.
So, Barbara's listening. Don't pull out those life insurance policies quite yet.
Okay. Well, you know, as far as those life insurance policies are concerned, they've made money off me than I've made off them. And you know, the thing I always like about life insurance is, it's a little bit like when you bet on a Philadelphia sports team to win. If you win, you lose. But, you know, I've done some research.
You know what? I'm sorry, guys. John, are you on number four? Because I have a feeling that they haven't been hearing all of this great stuff.
This is Mike number four.
Oh, well, and you're just on the air. Sorry about all of that.
You mean my words of wisdom have not been brought? Well, let me bring everybody up to speed. What we were talking about is the law of unintended consequences and how it applies to sports. And as you and Bill know, Pat, the law of unintended consequences is in the nature of a defense. So the idea, as I started to explain this as Bill was walking in, I throw a rock. And I forget the poem. It just ends up. It ends up with something like I know not where it goes or something like that. And that's the idea. So I throw a rock in the air, and it hits somebody in the eye and puts their eye out. Yeah, I shouldn't be talking about eye injuries
because
that's the last thing I want to talk about is eyes because I've developed another problem today. Having said that, the idea, the defense would be, well, I threw the rock in the air, and I didn't throw it at Bill. I didn't intend to hit Bill in the eye or anywhere, so I'm not responsible for that. But the argument, and I'll let Bill expand on this, is that it's the law of unintended consequences that applies, that you are responsible for the consequences of your actions if they are irresponsible.
That is true. The law of unintended consequences looks at a definition almost of recklessness and knowing an intentional disregard of whether your act had a reasonable likelihood of causing harm. And in civil cases, that's a question for a jury. In bankruptcy cases, that's sometimes usually a question for a judge. And in criminal cases, that's certainly a question
for the jury.
So
Well, Bill, let me bring this back to the sports realm.
Go right ahead.
The New York Yankees, like a lot of other teams, are suffering incredible injuries, okay? And people are now starting to wonder what the heck is going on. Is it bad training? Are the trainers responsible? Are the regimens too difficult and they're getting injured because they're being pushed too hard? Are they not difficult enough so that when they're in playing action that the, you know, the strain of enhanced play is pushing them over the limit? Or is it bad nutrition? You know, what's the cause? And there's a theory that's bounding around and has something to do with the fact that they changed the disabled list law. The disabled list always was 15 days, okay? Bill is out on the 15-day disabled list. He's got a hangnail and he can't perform today, okay? Or John's got tonsillitis, he can't talk, so therefore I can't do anything. Although there may be a few people who disagree with that. In any event, so
what, how did they explain to our viewers how it was changed?
Well, it was what it means when you put a player on the disabled list, he can't play for a certain period of time. Now, the reason that is important is because the team can then add another player to the major league roster, typically from the AAA club. So if you just rest somebody for a day or two because they have an ache or a pain or they're a little tired, you can't add somebody to the 25-man roster. That person just is not available for that game. But if somebody suffers a muscle strain problem and they can't play for a week, typically you would put them on an extended leave so that you can bring another player in to replace them. That is called the disabled list. They are not able. Well, what they decided to do, and I think it was a very smart move, is they reduced the disabled list period from 15 to 10 days, meaning that the more minor injuries won't result in, you know, a disproportionately long trip off the playing field. Because let's say you need somebody out for a week. Well, under the old rule, you had to keep them out for 2 weeks, 15 days. Now you can put them on that 10-day disabled list. So that was the idea. It's a little bit more effective for utilizing the players, and also in a close call, it's better for the player because the management is more apt to put them on the 10-day than the 15-day list if that injury is marginal. But now what's happening is marginal injuries put them on the disabled list.
An unintended consequence.
Of a great idea to lower the period of inactivity on the disabled list. So there you have it, folks.
But, you know, folks, there's a real advantage to that, too. You get to see what you have at AAA.
Well, that's right. That's the point.
And I think that's another unintended consequence.
That's true.
And sometimes you have what we call the Wally Pipp Lou Gehrig problem.
Explain to the folks what that means. Yeah.
1926, Wally Pipp is a Yankee first baseman.
And he was a good player.
Great defensive player, good hitter, always managed to hit 270,
solid,
280.
Solid player.
Very solid. Any team would be happy to have him. Well, one day Wally gets the flu, or he's just a little tired.
Yes, for a day off.
Muscle. So they put in this rookie who had been in the minors, and they brought him up just to sit on the bench and watch. I didn't play him. His name was Lou Gehrig, and he played what?
2,183 games, or is that the record that was broken by Cal Ripken Jr.?
Cal Ripken broke.
Cal broke it, but I'm saying I
think Gehrig was 2,300.
Was it 300?
2,300 games. Not an even number.
Ripken
broke it. So that's the risk that you take. I mean, we're seeing this right now with the Yankees, with Greg Bird having all kinds of injuries, and they bring up Luke Voit. And Luke Voit is
So here Bill is bringing Greg Bird and Luke Vogt in the same paragraph with Lou Gehrig. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
We've got to bring this down to contemporary things, John. I know you like to live in the past of your Red Sox glories.
Yeah, but the fact is I think most people know about Lou Gehrig and probably more know about him as a result of the disease that we now call the Lou Gehrig disease.
Yes, AML. It's a terrible disease. But more importantly, what's happening now is Luke Vogt is hitting well. He's fielding well. And so is Greg Bird. So now you have a competition at first base. I think this is only good because they also put Luke Vogt in the outfield. He's played well there. He's got a good arm. So, you know, we're seeing that there's a benefit to this 10-day disabled list rather than the 15-day list. I think where the list becomes very important is with your pitching. Pitchers throw a lot harder. They throw a lot more curves. There's a lot more stress on the arm, shoulder, and elbow.
Bill, here's the answer. 2,130 games. A record that stood for 56 years until Cal Ripken surpassed him in 1995. But you want to know what's really interesting for all you technophiles out there? When I Googled Lou Gehrig, it came up, you know, history. What do you think the next thing was on the search list?
No idea.
Wally Pipp.
Oh,
to
really?
Bill's point. Isn't that funny?
Wow.
Isn't that funny how that's linked? Well, Pipp's name will be forever.
And for all you young folks, remember when these two gentlemen and I were growing up, what would we have had to do to double-check that statistic?
Go to the library.
Go to the library. And
there's something to be said for that.
Because, you know, it's very easy to type something in or say to Siri or to Cortana, what's the record for, and then say what you're interested in. But now it's too easy. You don't have to.
I disagree, guys. You know where I would have gone to look for it? Now, you know, not the library. Where would I have gone?
Probably something associated with Lambeau Field. I'm trying to think.
Nope. Come on, guys. What would we have, and why would we have known those statistics?
Well, Bill and I would have been looking at a Playboy magazine sports.
Yeah, well, they didn't have Playboy magazines when you were growing up. Anyway, no, come on.
All right, let's solve this, Bill.
Okay, you
that's
guys.
That's why John doesn't have astigmatism.
You have to. This should have been the easiest question that I asked.
Where would Pat go to research a sports question?
She'd ask her dad.
Nope. Remember those little
baseball... How old were you? Was this before you met Dave or not?
Remember those old baseball cards?
Oh, yeah.
That's where we got all of our statistics.
Tops bubble gum.
Yeah.
You got it.
I still have some stuck in the back of my teeth.
Well, the cards, unfortunately.
Do you know there are still some... I wonder if there's anyone alive who was at Lou Gehrig Day at Yankee Stadium. I wonder if anybody is alive. I happen to personally know somebody whose mother was at Yankee Stadium on Lou Gehrig Day.
I'm going to take a while.
She wasn't there.
I think that
was
1938.
So what day was it? 1930-something, right?
37 or 38. That's just my guess. Now, I will tell you that one of the first books I read as a child was about Lou Gehrig.
And what would everybody else who wasn't there, what would they have been doing that day?
Let's find out. 1936, 1937, they'd be listening to baseball on the radio.
On the radio. Remember?
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the things that, I do believe that we all have better imaginations because of everything that we had to listen. And some of those announcers were phenomenal.
They painted a picture.
Who was the Cubs announcer who was on for so long?
Harry Carey was St. Louis.
St. Louis, that's right.
The Cubs did have an analog. He was like, who's the guy for the Dodgers who's contemporary?
Vin Scully.
Vin Scully.
But for the Cubs?
But there was somebody with the Cubs.
It's in the back of my
mind.
Me too.
Conjure it up. But you know, folks,
But just so everybody knows, when you listen to the baseball games, especially the baseball games, they were so good, and you visualized exactly what was happening. You knew exactly.
They paint a picture for you.
Yep, and you knew exactly where.
And in your mind, you imagine
outfield.
That. Just like the old radio shows.
Oh yeah, well.
Remember the old. Remember the shadow. You know, remember the shadow used to be on the radio. You can buy the tapes because I've actually bought a couple of those old radio shows.
Oh,
on tape.
My
also,
loved the
you know
shadow.
What I heard once? I have this somewhere. It's actually I can't play it now because it's on a vinyl record. The War of the Worlds by Orson Welles. I listened to it with my kids years ago. They were little kids, and they were listening to it. I was riveted until one of my kids said, "Dad, this is fake. Don't you know that?" You know, and
well,
I was riveted
shame.
Because I pictured myself in being in New Jersey in, what was it, 1938. And thinking they invade, and that's but the amazing thing is if they were going to come from outer space and come to Earth and invade, would they come here? The taxes are too high. They'd say, let's go somewhere else.
Well, I will tell you, having worked just down the road from Grover's Mill.
Hey guys, we're really getting off, but that's off topic.
By the way, Lou Gehrig Day, and we should have remembered this, Bill. 1939, but a very special day during the baseball season, sort of in the middle. Can you guess which day?
Probably July 4th.
Correct. And whose birthday is July 4th? You got to know this.
United States.
Well, that too. But even I know this, and I'm chagrined to. Who do I always say is the SOB who had the audacity to die in 2010 when there was no estate tax? Big George dies in 2010. They don't have to sell the Yankees.
Steinbrenner.
His birthday was July 4. And who threw a no-hitter on July 4?
Was it
against the Red Sox?
Was it Dwight Gooden?
Close. Yeah. Began with a D.
Oh.
An Italian guy, of course, Bill.
Oh.
Dave
Righetti.
Throws a no-hitter against the Red Sox on George Steinbrenner's birthday. I think it was 1982, July 4. But, yeah, that was the day Lou Gehrig's day took place. Lou Gehrig Day, July 4, 1939. Amazing.
You know, we're talking about ancient history, and because you folks are always upset with me and tease me about Philadelphia sports fans, I did some research, and I found the
the smallest book of world championships
exactly,
in Philadelphia.
Exactly. I have
sports teams.
I have searched the primordial ooze between the Delaware and the Schuylkill rivers to come up with the original prototype primordial Philadelphia sports fan. I mean, who was it who booed
Santa Claus?
Booed Santa Claus.
Come on, the Eagles.
Who
fans.
Was it who cheered when the Flying Willendas fell 30 feet from a wire between one end to the other of Veterans Stadium to the hard, frozen tundra of Veterans Stadium? Philadelphia sports fans. Who was it who threw rocks at beautiful young women dressed in Phillies uniforms there to catch fly balls and foul balls? Philadelphia sports fans. Well,
who vilified the Cowboys wide receiver, Michael Irvin, when he busted his knee in Philly? They all cheered.
Yes, well, he was a Dallas Cowboy. But, you know,
and that's indictable offense. But
yeah, I mean that. But unfortunately, as much as you know, guys, I don't like a place called Minnesota, the Vikings. But I would never cheer when one of their guys went down.
Well, you know, Pat's right. You used to go to the library to do the research.
Baseball cards.
But I want to tell you about a story that I found in the Philadelphia Inquirer that tells us about that first fan. Now, I, being sort of naive and a Temple University graduate, always thought that the first Philadelphia sports fan was a caveman, Charlie or Og, who would watch the head of the cave swing and miss three times at a brontosaurus with a club. That's not true.
Okay.
That was, whatever it is, that's not the case. So let me tell you about the voice that launched the reputation of Philadelphia fans. You know, no one can say for sure whether there were 200 fans who booed Bryce Harper after his second strikeout in the Phillies' Thursday opener a couple of weeks ago. No one was certain whether the reaction was tongue-in-cheek or genuine. All anyone did know was that the predictable response was coming. Those cruel and fickle Philadelphians had done it again, turned on another athlete they'd stood and cheered for just 2 hours later. That reputation is the original sin, the innate blemish on all Philadelphia sports fans, and the snake in the garden, the one to blame for our eternal taint, was a corpulent complainer back in the old days by the name of Peter Adelis. Philadelphia sports fans have always been loud and passionate people, but, you know, they've also been the same in Boston and New York. But it wasn't until Adelis put a face on our animus in the late 1940s that this city's sports fans became a distinct and despised breed. A lifelong South Philadelphian who worked for Gimbel's and later the post office, known as the Iron Lung of Scheib Park, which is later torn down, was a prototype for how the rest of America saw the typical Philadelphia fan. Overweight, overwrought, outspoken, and persistently negative, he gleefully beset professional athletes throughout the 1940s and 1950s. According to Connie Mack biographer Norman Macht, opponents, quote, dreaded playing at Scheib Park, which later became Connie Mack Stadium, at 25th and Lehigh, where they had 2 hours or more of constant bellowing from one source, and he never spared the home team either. Adelis might have been an off-putting presence at games before World War II, but it wasn't until after the war that his reputation grew as large as his larynx. Sports writers profiled him. The Yankees imported him for a vital doubleheader with Cleveland in 1948. The Phillies gave him a season pass to ensure the discomfort and the unease of their opponents. What made the players mad was his timing and the accuracy of his remarks, one columnist wrote of Adelis, who thoroughly researched the lies of his targets. He was an expert at needlework. He had finesse. Although he served for a time as an usher in Scheib Park, he most frequently sat right behind the visitor's dugout. And there, equipped with a grab bag of noisemakers and a voice that could rattle the girders of the often nearly empty baseball stadium, he relentlessly assaulted home and visiting players. Bob Feller, Adelis claimed, was the easiest guy to get riled up. Ted Williams, Jackie Robinson, and Eddie Matthews were among those who had to be restrained from going after him.
Oh, but, and Eddie Matthews would have been concerned about, you know, his face. You know, he was Mr. Wonderful. Every young woman in Wisconsin, you know, he was single, and every young woman in Wisconsin probably became interested in baseball just because their whole family listened. But then when Eddie Matthews came, boy, it didn't take much.
But thank you for that digression, and Pat. But in 1948, the Sporting News asked Adelis for some guidelines that other baseball park loudmouths could follow. Keep pouring it on was one of his scientific rules of heckling. Adelis frequently ignored another one of them, nothing purely personal. He could be cruel, calling Joe DiMaggio garlic breath and Lou Boudreau marshmallow, and occasionally targeting a player's marital or financial woes. There's no evidence to support the legend, that the A's paid him to berate Cleveland's Larry Doby. Whenever the American League's first black player came to bat, Adelis did pound a hammer on a Nazi helmet and scream, "Hey, Dopey!" There's no evidence of that, but here we are. Scheib Park crowds tended to be small, and Adelis's booming voice ricocheted around the old park like mortar fire. He loved to target umpires. "Blind chowderheads" was his favorite epithet. And struggling pitchers, rising from his seat when they were yanked to bellow, "I told you so." Once he screamed, "Welcome, Walter," nonstop for 10 minutes until a rattled Washington Senators pitcher, Walt Masterson, issued 6 bases on balls. He couldn't be embarrassed. When the Yankees' Joe Gordon, a second baseman, turned at home plate and yelled, "Shut up, whale belly." Adulis was delighted at the attention. Although he weighed 275 pounds, he often went shirtless on spring training visits, promising Philadelphia Bulletin columnist Herb Brown to write, "The vast landscape he exposed was far from pretty." Once, umpire Larry Goetz halted a game for 15 minutes while he had Adulis screaming all the way to the exit ejected. Fans frequently grew so weary of his roaring voice that they bought him sodas and hot dogs, hoping he'd just shut up. "I knew what they were up to," Adulis said, so he yelled between bites. When the A's left for Kansas City in 1954, Adulis went into a decline. He suffered a series of strokes in subsequent years and died at 62 in 1981, a year after the Phillies won their first World Series. No one has ever deciphered the real reasons
John,
for his
don't
behavior.
You think he was probably so shocked that they actually won?
That had to lead to it.
Forget all these other platitudes.
I thought it was the cheesesteaks clogging the guy's arteries. They may have had some deep psychological root, but Adulis didn't think so. "I'm as quiet as a mouse all day at work," Adulis, who eventually married in 1954, said several years ago, "Most guys go home and holler at their wives. I'm single, so I pick on ball players." And that, my friends, is the history of the obnoxious Philadelphia sports fan.
Well, let me bring something up.
Right
ahead. Because I wonder how many of our viewers, you mentioned a stadium called Connie Mack.
Yep.
And one of the things that I loved is all the stadiums that were named after somebody. And, of course, my Packers still play in Lambeau Field. And where do your Eagles play?
Lincoln Financial Field.
And that's one of the things that I've just, you know, don't like about major league sports.
I'm trying to say some teams just sell out.
They'll just sell out.
Sell out, sell the name, you know. MetLife Stadium.
Well, it's still
Prudential Center.
It's still called Yankee Stadium, ladies and gentlemen. And it's still called Fenway.
Some people call it something else, but that's...
Oh, that's true. And some people call it Wrigley Field, even though you're not allowed to chew gum there anymore.
Yeah, right.
That was an old... But Wrigley Field, that goes back to what?
1910.
The name, probably what? Now, I was going to say 1920, but you're saying 1910.
The Wrigley Gum Company has been in business, I think, since the 1890s.
Right.
Chewing gum became very popular.
But most of the fields weren't named after some company back then, as I recall.
No, remember, Wrigley Field was named after P.K. Wrigley, who owned the Wrigley Chewing Gum Company, and the chewing gum became popular because a lot of men chewed tobacco, and probably a lot of women too, and people decided that chewing tobacco and spitting that chaw was frankly disgusting. So, and chewing gum could be flavored, whereas tobacco, good luck. I have to say I've never ever chewed tobacco, nor do I ever want to, but chewing gum, bubble gum, baseball cards, that was my thing. But, Pat, you know, you were talking about stadiums and names, I'm sure you had a point.
Well, I mean, I love the fact that, and I think that the one thing that they could never do in
Actually, a little
in
correction
Green Bay.
There, Bill. Wrigley opened in 1914.
I was only 4 years off.
Yeah, you were pretty
But
close.
One of the things is that there's no way that I think they'd ever rename Lambeau Field. I mean, Curly Lambeau and, you know, all of the old legends, they really are legends. And that's one of the things about not having an owner. You know, they don't get away with some of these things that the owners get away with.
Well, Pat, if they can dig up and move Lennon, I guess they could rename a sports stadium, couldn't they?
Not in Green Bay.
I guess not. So, but let me ask you a question. Should stadiums sell naming rights, or should they be named after some great player?
Oh, I hate the fact that they're selling the naming rights to stadiums. What's really funny is when the company goes bankrupt. And, of course, we know that happens.
Or if you name an athletic facility for someone, then you find out something unsavory in their past. all of a sudden that changes.
Yeah, well, then they can rename it. Mm-hmm. And that's easier to do than get rid of some of these financial names.
Well, supposing hypothetically that they found out that Curly Lambeau liked to tear the wings off of flies. It was cruel to animals.
Well, that wouldn't be a big deal in Wisconsin.
No, for those of us who are self-professed squirrel huggers like myself, maybe I should be outraged if I find that to be so.
Well, it'd be fake news.
Why is it named against Vince Lombardi? Named for Vince Lombardi. I mean, there was a man who was a brilliant coach, also a man of tremendous faith. He had a brilliant career as a player at Fordham. He was one of the seven blocks of granite, wasn't he?
I never thought, from what I knew about Lombardi, I never thought he was a great player. What do you think, John?
Player?
Yeah, I didn't think Lombardi
was
a good player.
No, I don't think he distinguished himself as a player as much as he did nearly
right.
As a coach. But he was one of the seven blocks of granite.
No, he was, but, you know.
Or is it four
that
blocks?
That was Fordham.
That was Fordham.
Right?
Four blocks of granite.
Yeah, but I mean, four blocks of granite
the
at Fordham.
Of the apocalypse who were in the back.
Maybe it was the
Red
seven
Grange.
Blocks of granite. I
and Red Grange.
Seven, yeah.
I can tell you because one of my colleagues in my office has a picture of him as a down lineman in a Fordham
well,
uniform.
Well, tell you what, guys, let's take a little break, give our poor listeners a little break to hear something from our sponsors, okay?
All right.
Okay.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email on air at hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Well, guys, we're back, and thank you to the listener who called to say that we had inadvertently left one of the mics on. Luckily, I don't think we got caught in any some of the language that I can hear around here. But in any event, we're back, and we're going to talk sports. And thank you again, because we'll be a little more careful to make sure that this all the mics are off during our commercials.
And remember, folks, we try to keep this within the bounds of decency, but every now and then we slip, and back up we get.
Especially mic four.
Well,
we won't say who's on mic four.
And remember, remember that song from all those Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies? Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start all over again. Moving right along.
Well, you're really showing your age, Bill.
God, I know that. My wife loves those movies. And if it's made after 1950, she's not interested. But, you know,
I want to share something with you. This, we were talking about Wrigley Field and chewing gum. And there was an ad, if you remember, they used to show twins on the ad. And
yep.
There were two young women.
Right.
And usually
the boys are Wrigley
two
twins.
Guys,
yeah, they're always
okay?
Two pretty blonde
and there
women.
Was a jingle that went with it. Interestingly enough, somebody posted this, and the name of the person who posted it, I'm not making this up, is Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N. But listen to the jingle. This is one of my favorite jingles of all time.
Are you going to sing it?
No.
Oh, well, I guess we should be counting ourselves.
See, it says Allison on there. Can you see it? It says Allison. See?
Okay, well, let's hear the jingle.
Let's hear the jingle. See, it says Allison? Okay, here we go.
You have to put it on speaker. I don't think our audience can hear it because we're not hearing it.
I'm not sure why it's not coming. Oh, no. Somehow.
Well,
I
John,
that
you
up,
could
folks.
Sing.
Go ahead. Be right back. Technical difficulties here.
Okay. Well,
I'm not sure.
Well, let's talk about another one of those brights of spring besides baseball.
You mean draft?
And the football
the
draft.
The combine
well,
and
there.
The football
I'm
draft?
There. You know, Pat, I attended one of the great rites of spring that the boating community has down at Silver Cloud Marina, Cedar Mar Yacht Club in Tall Oaks, had their annual sock burning and other portions of attire that will go unmentioned but rhyme with the word sock. The important thing, though, is that the old-time sailors, with the approach of the warm weather, would pull off the socks that they had been wearing since September.
That jingle used to motivate me as a kid to run out and buy Wrigley's gum. I loved that little jingle.
Well, that jingle
but
made
problem
me want to burn
was,
my socks.
Did you spend your money on Wrigley's or
baseball
did
cards.
You spend your money on that horrible bubble gum that came with that wonderful baseball card?
I love that bubble gum.
You did?
Oh, I thought it was the greatest bubble gum in the world. That and Bazooka.
And all the sugar would go away in about 30 seconds and be spitting it out and stuffing your mouth with another wad of fresh gum because the sugar would dissipate so quick.
No, there were those little square bubble gum. That was much
oh,
better.
Bazooka.
It was a bazooka.
Bazooka.
I thought it was
had the
feeling.
Comics in it.
Oh, Bazooka
thought,
Joe.
No,
the
no,
Joe.
No, no, no. We had something in the Midwest was Feely's or I you know I don't remember, but it was good bubble gum. So the issue was, did you buy good bubble gum?
That was Wrigley's double mint gum, not Wrigley's pure mint gum.
Double pleasure is waiting for you.
you have it, folks. One of my favorite jingles of all time.
It's amazing what gladdens his heart, isn't it? But
well,
we love him anyway.
True, but those who know me intimately know that,
not that intimately.
I'm a simple guy. You know.
Yeah. Well. Speaking of simple, now that Odell Beckham has flown the coop to the Cleveland Browns, are the Giants really going to trade a draft pick for to the Arizona Cardinals for Josh Rosen?
No. The Giants are going to take two great defensive players at number 6 and number 17. They're not going to trade the picks.
They're not trading those picks.
The only way they might trade him is if they could get Bosa at number 2. The quarterback is going 1 to Arizona. Bosa's going to go number 2. I think, you know, it's hard to know because you got Joey Bosa at San Diego.
Right.
Great player. And here's his brother, 2 or 3 years younger. You know, you hope you're getting the same guy, but you don't know. But there's some people think he's just as good.
Now, where did he play? Where is he playing?
Collegiately right now, I can't remember. LSU maybe? I can't remember. One of the big programs. But I think the only way the Giants would move up is if they could get Bosa. They want an impact player on defense. I am not sorry to see him go. For all the great, in fact, somebody pointed out on the Giants website, I happen to see this, the day of the trade, you know, you're in shock. So you check the website just to see what the comments are. So do you know the most famous picture of Beckham with the one-handed catch in the corner of the end zone against the Cowboys, right?
Right.
In fact, I bought an autographed picture of that from my son-in-law, John, that he has. It's all blown up. It's a beautiful picture signed in blue by Odell. Somebody wrote in, posted the picture and said, notably, the Giants lost that game. The point being that they didn't win anything with this guy. Now, of course, the day in Green Bay with the Hail Mary that killed him at the end of the half. I mean, that the Giants had a 14-3 lead, were just running over the Packers like they were, you know, water through. And then they just collapsed. The only interesting thing from that game, and I can still remember Pat being very bitter about it, in the second half when the Giants were losing the game, was slipping away, and they realized they were, because at one point they were down by about 20 points, they got reckless. And I can remember Aaron Rodgers threw a ball to one of the wide receivers, and they clotheslined him. And it was unnecessary, but you knew they were doing it just to hurt the Packers.
Yep.
And sure enough, the Packers lost the next week. They got really big. They made them pay for that victory.
Well, you know,
and frankly,
football, unfortunately.
You know, but that's one thing that really has always disturbed me, because it's not necessary.
No.
And these guys, it's their living. I mean, come on. We know that most of them have a pretty short, you know, span in the NFL. Most of them aren't making the zillions of dollars that someone like, you know, Rodgers and a few of these other guys are earning. So, you know, come on. I just hate those illegal hits.
But, you know, cheap shots notwithstanding, it's just too easy to get hurt in a lot of these games.
Well, that's the point. I mean, you know, legitimately, if you get hurt, you get hurt, but not if, in fact, it's deliberate.
Bill, that lit up like a Christmas tree.
I refer to it as a Hanukkah bush, but nonetheless, that's exactly this. Fellow is a colleague, called me at exactly the time I don't want him to call, so I'll have to get back.
Well, that's funny. I've gotten 3 such calls during this program. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Friday afternoon between 5 and 6, clients will call. And that's why we love you, clients.
Well, then why do you give out your cell phones to clients?
I give my cell phone
to clients. That's a question you're not supposed to ask.
Well, actually, I don't, because I'll forget to turn my phone off, and I'm in the middle of a courtroom. And believe me, the judges are not happy when your phone goes off.
There goes the Hanukkah bush again.
So what else do you have prediction, John, about, you know, the draft? Anything, you know, combine, draft? I mean, for those of us who are diehard,
I think that as much as, at least from the Giants' perspective, last year you had 6 quarterbacks projected to go in the first round, none of which the Giants felt were championship caliber quarterbacks. They had the second pick overall, and I think they knew that Cleveland was either going to take Baker Mayfield or Josh Darnold, or Sam Darnold. And when they took Mayfield, I don't think the Giants would have taken it. They wanted Barkley. He was their guy because they, while a running back is not as important as a quarterback, I think they felt the relative value is, you know, to the point where it didn't justify a overall number one pick for any of those guys. Now, this guy Mayfield in Cleveland may prove everybody wrong. He can run. He can throw. Quite frankly, the Giants are in love with drop-back quarterbacks. They got four Super Bowl trophies to prove that. And I think they were not about to change their entire franchise to move to a scrambling quarterback. I just don't think they were going to do it. And then with Darnold is the one guy who I think arguably they made a mistake. Because I think Darnold is a very good quarterback who will do well with the Jets if they surround him with decent talent, give him a good offensive line to protect him. You could. I think he's good enough to win with. I thought Darnold long term was a better risk than Mayfield because running quarterbacks don't last that long, and it remains to be seen. But I think the Giants are looking towards next year's draft, where you have two bona fide, you know, franchise quarterbacks coming out next year.
Yeah, but I think the question is, will the Jets be able to put enough good players around Darnold?
Well, Pat, the guy's just played 1 year. You'd like to think that sometime in the next 10 years,
well,
they'll put a team together.
But if they are
talking the New York Jets.
Yeah, and if they don't, is he going to get hurt in year two or three? I mean, one of the things that has been so disappointing to me about the Packers is Aaron Rodgers, this is his time.
Yeah.
And
they've been woefully deficient in building that offensive line. What they've done to Rodgers is exactly what the Giants did to Eli, except you can't really fault the Giants. They used four high picks, number one picks, that all failed. Okay, they traded for Nate Solder, who went from everybody considered the top five linemen in the league, to a sieve. So it isn't all on the Giants management. I actually thought when they started the season 2 years ago that they were going to go deep into the playoffs, and you saw the very first play from scrimmage 2 years ago was a sack of Eli Manning 12 yards deep.
Right.
And you looked and you scratched your head and you said, can this be? And that was a foreshadowing. The first play from scrimmage of the year was a 12-yard sack.
But see, and I go back, and you know, one of my favorite players, obviously, was Jordy Nelson. But why in the world the Packers didn't keep him for one more year? I know he's retired. He went to another team. And obviously, you know, I think at that stage in your career, it's very hard to
segue here. McCarthy gets fired. Now all kinds of stuff is coming out about McCarthy. Not only did he and Rodgers not get along in the last couple of years, but now you're hearing things like he took off, he wasn't always there, he wasn't always accessible. And you know, you like to think of Mike McCarthy as one of those Tom Coughlin-like coaches, you know, Bill Belichick's.
I never thought that. You know,
I never thought that either.
He was apparently a whack job.
And
that's why he didn't get a job. When he left the Packers, everybody speculated the Jets were going to hire him. A bunch of teams, nobody did. Because apparently the rumors are true. And so Aaron Rodgers is vindicated.
Right. But it seemed to me, I don't care. I mean, they couldn't give Jordy a stupid contract, but they could have. I think he would have taken less. And, you know, they said,
home field discount?
Yeah. Well, I think he would have. I honestly do. In fact, I think what I am looking to see is him to come back to the Packers to retire as a Packer. May never play, but, you know, maybe he'll get suited up. And, you know, you have to, I don't know. There are certain players that just, even if they've lost their edge, they have enough there that they're going to inspire the other guys. And, you know, he was always good for maybe a touchdown or one of those long throws. And so he was a little bit slower.
He was a possession receiver, no doubt. Pat, what is your succinct take on the Packers' draft plan this year?
I don't know. You know, they have a new coach, so it's hard. It's hard for me, and I'm not good anyway at doing that. But it's hard for me to think
Pat
how
is
they're
so
going to.
Folks, she's excellent at making picks, and Bill, I think Pat is it's just humble Pat coming out today.
Well but I want
to. Modest woman, I have to say. She when it comes to those sorts of things.
Modest. But, I'm glad you said that. Yeah. The nuns back in my grammar school might not have agreed. But any event,
well, funny, no nuns ever called me modest. But,
well, I
know,
well, and I
nor my daughters.
And I have to tell you, no nun ever called me modest either. I don't think I've ever met any.
No,
they're interesting people, Bill.
Yeah. What?
And actually, some of them will, and I will stand up for them. I went to a boarding school. You know, they were really very human. And I think maybe only those of us who went to boarding school ever recognize that. But in any event, back to
the draft.
We try
to keep politics and religion to a minimum here, but it creeps into the discussion.
But there were a few of my nuns that would have probably could have gone out and played at Lambeau Field.
Yeah. Well, and as defensive lineman, no doubt.
No doubt.
The interesting thing.
By
is
the way,
the
did you ever hear that famous description by Vince Lombardi of how he would pick his defensive lineman versus offensive lineman? Did you ever hear that one? Well, he said he'd take all his big guys and he'd line them up and he'd walk in front of each one and punch him in the mouth. And the ones that that hit back, he'd put on defense, and the ones that didn't, on the offensive line.
Well, that's
think about that.
That's interesting.
Think about that.
That's interesting. The
you know, the thing is, that could be a true story about Lombardi.
That's what I'm saying. There is similitude there. I think there is absolutely some fact buried in the fiction there.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing. The Eagles are going to be looking
and
for
also,
help.
By the way, Vince Lombardi was a stout Catholic.
He was.
I didn't know.
He went to mass
every day.
Every day at Saint. Oh, I can't remember it. It's a very strange name.
Bartholomew's.
Bartholomew's, something like that. No, but it's an unusual
yes,
name. It's not just Bartholomew.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
think.
So I'm looking for the church in Green Bay most local to Lambeau Field.
No. Well,
maybe it could. We may come up with that information.
But
actually,
the other thing that...
may just give me that
the
information.
The best, if you and...
Catholic Church closest to Lambeau Field.
I never knew anyone who did, but he also had the famous parties after the games at his house.
At his house?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and he would have all of these people over to his house after the games. And
now, would he do that when they won? What about when they lost? Which was very rare.
My sense was that they had these parties every home game.
I see.
And, I mean, I'm talking
about... The
Packers
very rarely lost at home.
Right. But, and, you know, remember, this was the time where people got dressed up to go to games.
Yeah.
Top hats. I love to see some of the old baseball
movies with the guys with the suits and overcoats over their
and
suits.
The hats, yeah.
Hats and ties.
And especially you would see that at the baseball games.
Yes.
I mean, that
in
was...
In midsummer, guys would have suits on.
Right.
Going to the baseball game.
And their hats and the women would be dressed up.
It shows how our society has fallen.
Well, certainly we don't dress in the same way when we... You know, even go out. Sometimes it's amazing, even when we go out to dinner to, you know, nice place. But that's aside.
When you walk into most law firms today, you can't tell who the lawyers are. You know, if he's a lawyer or a law clerk or a librarian or a custodian, perhaps.
Well, that's good. But in any event,
It's good to hear that we're getting so egalitarian in this society, isn't it?
Well, I'm waiting, though, to have... First of all, I love it that Atlanta has reasonable prices for food. But I also think that one of the things that these stadiums could do would be have better restaurants. In other words, why can't they have good restaurants? We're now finding good restaurants in airports.
So, yes. Oh, yeah, you have Gallagher's in Newark. You have a couple of good Italian restaurants in Newark. And I can also tell you in the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, where I spent 20 hours 2 weeks ago today coming back from Vegas, they have a Maggiano's.
Also a good Italian restaurant. But, you know, people are looking for diversion. They also, restaurants know that you've got a captive audience in an airport. Once you get past security, you're stuck until you get on your plane. So, of course, people are going to say, hey, we can make a few extra bucks here. We can sell somebody a $50 steak. And, you know, that's a whole lot better than a $10 hot dog.
It might be.
It's a scarcity theory.
Ooh,
you know?
Guys, guess what?
Are we out of luck here?
Let me play a couple spots because say goodbye.
Okay.
Say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
We'll get to goodbye, folks. Get up off that couch.
This week we'll get to that answer on Vince Lombardi's Parish.
Except not next week because
we're
off.
Good Friday.
Bye, guys.
You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the 100in County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@100in-chamber.org. The 100in County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
All right, welcome to our show this morning. Good morning, 100in. I'm Jeannie Murphy filling in for Chris Bianco. Big